Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. And we're joined by the man who hopes one day to have a beard as awesome as Ryan Fitzpatrick's, Eric Meehan, with us. Hello, sir.
Good evening, afternoon, evening, Radio Land. Are you as nervous as I am? I'm nervous. So, speaking of the bearded one and football, so Rich Carey, as I'm sure you've known, I have closeted myself. I've been a hermit. I've been, because this is the first year, this is the first time I'm ever going to unveil my mock draft. I literally lost track of days, right? So I'm like, okay, but I'm going to do it on Rich Kibble. So here's the, okay, this is my first ever 2021 mock draft, Eric Meehan. Everybody else has one, so I figured I had to do one. Okay, number one, this is big, okay? I put a lot of thought into this. Like Urban Meyer, college coach, but he's hip to the new game, so I'm thinking Urban Meyer, okay, where is he going to go? SEC guy, right? Florida, Kyle Pitt. Speedster, versatile. He's going to need someone for Gardner Minshew to throw to, right? So I'm thinking, okay, there you go. And somebody, if future Hall of Famer, but then this is where it gets gold. You're going to like this. Jet, number two, Joe Douglas. Looking to put his stamp, his own Jetsy sort of stamp on the Jets. He trades down. You're going to like this. He trades down to round four, pick number 107, which belongs to the Jets. So the Jets trade up from round four to round one, number two, which is probably the greatest upset of all time. And they are obviously, I mean, you got to have someone to protect Sam Darnold, right? So Penei Sewell is... I mean, the mightiest of the Ducks. I even blew my own mind with that one. What do you think?
It's going well so far.
Yeah.
What do you think the Giants will do?
Jack's notes. The top of my computer screen says, is it May 4th?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they pick Penei Sewell?
No, they did not. No.
No, no.
And you won't believe what they did with Sam Darnold.
I might. You know, I was all set with that. until I found out that you were going to interview Tiffany. And then my little 8-year-old brain got blown, and it was just ridiculous. Learned she posed for Playboy today. That was fun. Don't know if your listeners knew that.
Yeah, but, so did Debbie Gibson. They did everything together.
that's like bar trivia right there. All right, folks, I'm not really here to talk about football because obviously I shouldn't. I'm clearly the leading authority on the draft. Although I'm impressed. I'm impressed with my boys. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling like they might come in, you know, second or third in their division. Let's talk wine.
All right.
I believe in a thing called love, right? Let off the thing. I believe in a thing called champagne. I believe in it because it's the law. Let's talk about this month. We're going to talk about why it's the law, why certain wines are called things. And there's a term, a definition that you've heard me use a million times. It's appellation. And longtime listeners know this comes from the French word appeler, to call, right? And further, it's a term of identification when you say, you know, my name is Eric. You say, je m'appelle Eric. I call myself Eric. Why is this important? Well, because we've talked about the concept of terroir. Is it real? Let's assume, for the sake of argument, it is. Terroir being that no single any agricultural product any agricultural product can be made in one location only. If you make cheese in a valley in France where the cows are eating a certain type of grass and there's rainfall here, whatever, and you make cheese in another part of the world where they're eating different scrub and it's a different sort of season, it's going to taste different by the very nature. Winter milks and summer milks taste different because of calving and birth there. It happens in everything. It's not just wine. But what ended up happening, and this is where we sort of start to talk about why it had to become law, but basically the idea is that it's a delimited zone of a certain region, and we'll definitely talk about how those regions have changed over time, but essentially a certain region you can look at on a map is different than any other region. Therefore, the wines, the grapes grown there and the wines made from the grapes grown there can be called wine from there. And no other wine can be called wine from there. And this began to be a problem because our fighting boys came home from World War I, World War II especially, and had not only been in these regions, but literally been, especially in World War II, responsible for the recovery of wines that had been made in France and taken by the Nazis for use in Germany and or, Nazi usage in France. They literally did obviously take over two-thirds of the country, including such luminous places as Bordeaux, Burgundy, Champagne, the entire Loire Valley, basically all the places that you really, really care about, I guess, except essentially the south of France where the Vichy was. So, I mean, we're talking, really desired stuff. And there are wonderful stories, and if anybody cares, the book Wine and War details these at length, where American soldiers went and literally found stashes of French wine and were responsible for bringing them back. And when they brought them back, or simply when they liberated these villages, the villagers were, happy. And they popped these bottles, and there were celebrations galore. And when they came home, they came back to America, very, very smart entrepreneurs, especially out in California, said, yeah, drink this at home. You've found your job at the local whatever. You've started a family. You're a middle class earner. Drink California Sauterne. Well, why is that an issue? Well, Sauterne is a specific appellation in the Bordeaux region of France, which makes dessert wine. But California Sauterne was it was sweet like Sauterne is, but it was a thin table wine, and it was designed to. It was advertised, have it with fish on a Friday night or whatever. It had nothing to do with it. Of course, when I started in the wine business, I was stacking Gallo Hardy Burgundy, jugs of it. Hardy Burgundy never saw France, I promise you that. but that's where Burgundy is. And so it was really only in the past, 30 years, 20 years successfully, that names that had been sort of absconded from these important places. And not just France, people made Chiantis, people made all sorts of, Rieslings and things like this. And it's not necessarily that they didn't have Rieslings in them, but they were trying to play on the fact that people had had these wines when they were in the theater of war. So that's sort of the start of why we have to talk about appellations, because still today, people will come in and say, I need a champagne for mimosas. Classic. I'm sure people listening have done that. And somebody just did it the other day. And what stunned me was the person was shown a champagne and bought it. Champagnes start in my store at $41.99. Oof. That is an extraordinarily reasonable price. They go up from there, don't they ever? Now, that's not to say that there is not a lot of amazing bubbly wines that cost far, far less. And that is indeed what we tell people they should put into mimosas when people come in and say that they need a Sauterne for their poaching of their pear or whatever. We say, well, perhaps something else that doesn't cost quite as much, beef bourguignon, I need a Burgundy. Well, Burgundy started $25 a bottle. Perhaps this wonderful Pinot Noir from just outside Burgundy, which is essentially the same thing for purposes of making beef bourguignon. So as we'll go over all these different places and talk about appellations, I will be bringing up things like this, folks, just so you sort of understand that the Eurocentric lofty wine ideal that Americans were sort of taught, your parents were taught, and your grandparents were taught, that sort of filtered down, that's trying to, you know, and they're trying to beat it down with all this millennial hype and cans and all that. That's nice too, but wine is still a very serious, wonderful thing, but it's important to know where all your food comes from. So this is really how we're going to talk about where your wine comes from, that important part. I'm sure I'm running out of time. I just want to mention that we are in the start of our Perrin Natura Fest. We have a wonderful certified organic Côte du Rhône, white, rosé, and red that we are running a extraordinarily good special on for the rest of the spring and summer, with a wonderful accompanying video that I did an interview with Emmanuel Lemoine of Perrin. As well, Destination Downtown Bangor resumes tonight on the Downtown Bangor Facebook feed.
Yay.
Join Summer and I as we talk to the owners of Wildflower Cake Design. And I think this is just in time for Mother's Day. So anybody looking for an innovative, wonderful downtown way to support downtown as well as getting something good from mom, tune in 6 p.m. tonight, Facebook feed, Downtown Bangor, after Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Perfect time.
Sure, I'm out of time.
You are, and that's wonderful. We'll be watching tonight, and I look forward to talking with you next week to get your CFL mock draft.
That will be even worse. Or better. I don't know.
We'll find out that's when the time comes.
All right, gentlemen.
We'll good catch you next everyone. Tuesday. Thanks, Eric.
Bye-bye.
Eric May and Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, Downtown Bangor. Message in the bottle. Every Tuesday afternoon here on Downtown.